Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. Now's a good time to sign up for the Limud Conference. Limud New York will be in January of 2009. The conference will feature Pardes faculty members Yaffa Epstein and Leah Rosenthal. Check it out at limudnewyork.org. That's LIMMUDNY.org. This week, Rabbi David Levenkruis discusses Parshat Toldot. Rabbi David Levenkruis is a senior faculty member of Pardes and serves as the Pardes Director of Special Projects. And now, Rabbi David Levenkruis.
Thank you, Larry. There's a story about a man who gets into a cab in Chicago, and the cab driver wants to make some small talk. So he says to the passenger, "Where are you from?" So the passenger starts thinking. The passenger says, "I'm New York." So the cab driver says to him, no, not like where you from, but like where you from, where are you originally from? So the guy starts thinking and he says, should I say Eastern Europe? He said, well, we were only in Eastern Europe for 2,000 years. Should I say, well, we're from ancient Palestine, but really we weren't from ancient. If I say I'm from ancient Palestine, he's going to think that I'm Palestinian. So the guy really doesn't know what to ask. So finally, the cab driver turns around to him and he says to him, "You're Jewish, aren't you?" So the passenger says, "Yes, how do you know?" And he said, "Jews always take a long time answering. And it is indeed true that Jews take a long time to answer this question. Despite place and identity being a central part of what it means to be a Jew, for many of us, this is still a contentious issue. And in fact, the topic, this is exactly what is the topic of this week's Parsha, Toldot, Generations. It's a really, really, really exciting Parsha. And within all that is going on, there is an enigmatic incident where we read in great detail, and it's on the source sheet in front of you, that Isaac redug his father's well and gave them their old names. This really sounds like a banal incident. And as we will soon see, because it seems so banal, the commentators feel a very, very strong need to interpret it. I, of all people, know how important naming is. Living in Israel, which is a country where many, many Jews who came here took on new Israeli names, where they want, by taking a new Israeli name, they were saying goodbye to the diaspora and would choose a biblical or historical name. We know in Israel that certain neighborhoods that were once Arab have now been given Hebrew names, and the tension you often have between that. And in South Africa, where I come from, I'm also very aware of it, how the new government, the new democratic government, has undid names, either of white people or sometimes of people who they found objectionable. Similarly, at Pardes, where I teach, students often struggle all day with texts and how to integrate them into their lives. And often they ask themselves whether they want to change the Americanized names their parents gave them to a new Jewish or Hebrew name. And is this a good thing to do? And if so, what name do I choose? And do I choose the name that my parents gave me or a new name? In fact, it's even happened to me the other way around. I once knew a student from an ultra-Orthodox background who was re-examining his religious heritage and trying to work on the issue of how the secular world fitted into his life. And he once said to me very, very wistfully, he said, "I wish I had an English name. Some sign the secular world has something to do with me." And I admit that against my better judgment, I started calling him Willard Hathaway. I realized you could not probably get more of a Goyish name. And speaking of Goyish names, there was a story during the rounds when I lived in England about a new rabbi who comes to visit a congregant. And the congregant says to him, "I'm really sorry, but my children are not here. They're away at boarding school." And the rabbi says to him, "Well, what are their names?" And he says, "Well, my child is William Thackeray. My son is William Thackeray. And my daughter is Hermione. And my name is Willoughby." And as he's reeling off these names of very, very British names, the dog runs into the room and he says, "And Rabbi, meet our dog, Chaim Shmuel ben Dov HaLevi." Yes, names are important, as Isaac finds out in this week's parsha, It's a key to identity, and of course, identity is important. We read in Pasuk Yudchet, verse 18, that Isaac redug the wells that had been dug in the days of his father Avram, which had been plugged up by the Philistines after Avram's death. He gave them the same names that his father had given him. Vayashav Yitzhak vayachpor et be'erot ha'mayim asher chafru bimei Avraham aviv v'yistimum plishtim acharei mot Avraham v'yikra lahem shmot k'shmot asher kara lahem aviv. I think the first thing we learn from this is that one cannot eradicate your past. The Philistines plugged up the wells, but they were redug. One cannot get rid of identity. What is Isaac doing? What is Isaac doing by rebuilding these wells? What is Isaac doing by redigging these wells? And those of you who have a source sheet in front of you will see that the medieval commentators deal with it in different ways. The Ketav Kabbalah, the first one you have, says it was an opportunity for Kiddush Hashem. Avraham gave names that attested to God's presence to the wells, and so too Isaac did the same thing, and this gave people the opportunity, willy-nilly, maybe even against their will, to bring Kedusha into the world and to recognize God. And this really makes us think about the importance of how place names can affect us. How does the name of the place we live in affect us in the way we think about ourselves? So one answer is that he named it the same religious names as his father did as an opportunity for Kiddush Hashem. Rabbeinu Bachya says, uses it as an example for religious conservatism, that the same way that Isaac didn't set out anew, so to the same that Isaac did not set out anew, but went according to his father Avraham. And he sees it in a very, very powerful way that Yitzhak was somebody who followed his father Avraham. And in fact, it's very interesting to note that this is the way that Isaac is often seen. Isaac is often seen as the passive person between Abraham and Jacob, between Avram and Yaakov. Yitzchak is seen as the passive one who transmits the tradition. And really what I'm going to be showing today in our time together is that this is not so. So we have one idea that it was an opportunity for Kiddush Hashem. We have it as an example of religious conservatism, small c that is. And then you also have on your page the Ramban, using his famous notion of Ma'aseh Avot Siman Lebanim, the deeds of the father are a sign for the future generations. Ramban sees the three wells that Yitzhak dug as being prophecies of the temples, the two temples that have been destroyed, and the third temple that has yet to be built. These are all three wonderful, wonderful interpretations. But I'm going to take an allegorical and very, very personal reading of my own and share it together with you today. I read this whole passage about Isaac reconnecting to his father. The Akedah, the binding of Isaac, was no doubt a great trauma to this boy. And Isaac needs to somehow make his father part of him or work through the relationship that he has with his father. And this, the entire process that I went through to try and understand what is happening with Isaac very, very much reminded me of a poem by Yehuda Amichai, which is the last one on your sheets. Yehuda Amichai was, of course, the Israel poet laureate. And there's much in this poem that seems to echo the story. Amichai starts, Yerushalayim makom she'akol zochrim she'shachachu bo mashehu al aval hem enam zochrim ma shachachu. Uletzorech zechira zo ani chovesh al panai et pnei avi. Jerusalem is a place where all remember that they have forgotten something, but they don't remember what. And for the sake of this remembering, I wear my father's face on mine. Many of us know that feeling of discovery that comes with Jerusalem and coming to Jerusalem. And that's really what Isaac is going through. He's discovering what he realizes he's missing. He's refinding his father. He's trying to bring his father back into his life. And it's interesting that Amichai uses the metaphor of wearing my father's face in mine, because Rashi, on your sheet, Breshit Kafhei Pasuk Yud Tet, Genesis 25:19, Rashi quotes the Midrash that there was a fear that people would think that Yitzhak was illegitimate in some way, that he was brought in from some other place. And therefore, what God did was God made Isaac's facial features exactly the same as those of Avram. They were carbon copies of each other, so that nobody could say that this was not Avram's child. It's a magnificent midrash, and really begs the question, what does it mean to walk around with your father's face? What does it mean for Isaac to be walking around with his father's face? What does it mean to be the child of a great person? And what is the burden of having that face? What does it mean when Amichai says, for the sake of this remembering, I wear my father's face on mine? Isaac then goes on to dig new wells, but it doesn't work. Their arguments about the wells and the shepherds of other masters dispute the ownership of the new wells. And the reading I'd like to take today is that the shepherds are inside Isaac himself. The shepherds, the one who say, this well is no good, this well is mine, it's not yours. It's something inside Isaac that he's not yet his own shepherd. He's not yet able to rediscover the father, and doesn't yet have enough confidence for God to be his shepherd. Neither does he have enough confidence to break out on his own. And the names that he gives the new wells that he's dug reflect this. One is called Esek, challenge, and the other Sitna, accusation. And that is what Isaac is going through. He's being challenged and he's being accused. But from the challenges and accusations, Isaac learns. He finally digs another well. And it's interesting that he digs it with his own hands. The previous wells he told his servants to dig for him. Here he's digging it with his own hands. He digs another well and he calls it Wide Spaces, Rehovot. In fact, in Israel, there is a town still called Rehovot. V'yatek misham v'yachpor be'er acheret v'lo ravu aleha v'yikra shma Rehovot v'yomer ki ata herchiv Adonai lanu uparinu ba'aretz. Now God has granted us ample place to increase the land. To become strong, Isaac needs to rediscover his father. He needs to break out on his own, face challenges and accusations, until he has the confidence to build something with his own hands that is, on the one hand, new, and this is different from what Rabbeinu Bachya was saying, and his own, and yet, on the other hand, continues the legacy of his father. In Amichai's words, V'hashelot sheshoalim beharim ha'elu, nisharu ketamid, ra'ita et atzon sheli, ra'ita et aro'eh sheli. And the questions which are asked amongst these hills have remained unchanging. Have you seen my flock? Have you seen my shepherd? Isaac has to become his own shepherd. He also has to find God as his own shepherd and own that discovery. So who cares? This is interesting, I hope. But why is this important? I think on one level, every individual needs a sense of wholeness, and Isaac needs it, whether it be a country, community, a Pardes student. We all need a sense of wholeness, a sense of an integrity, a sense of being our own person, but also connected to our past in a very, very meaningful way. But I think there's more than that. Earlier on, I mentioned that Isaac is often typecast as a passive passer-on of tradition. Avram and Yaakov are seen as proactive, but Isaac is the one who transfers the Masorah, who transfers the tradition without really adding to it. I don't believe that one can ever be a passive transmitter. To effectively pass on a tradition, one has to wrestle with it and find one's own way. And I think this refers to all of us. There's no such thing as passively transferring something on. We all have to find our own way, separate and rejoin. And what is the purpose of this all? After this, Avram goes to Beersheba, and he names the place Beersheba. Does something similar to what his father did before. They both name Beersheba. They both give it the same name. I read a very, very interesting statement many years ago. It was actually a credo of a Reformed Jew, but I think it refers to many Jews who are not Reformed as well. And the statement said, I am a Reformed Jew because just because my grandfather did something does not mean I should do it or I should not do it. Mark Twain said it in a different way, and that was is that he said, in different versions you have of the same story, that once upon a time I thought my parents know nothing, and lately I spoke to my father, and it's amazing what he's learned in the years. Another version of the same statement says that there are two great crises in a child's life. First, when they realize their parents aren't always right, and secondly, when they realize that their parents aren't always wrong. This is what is happening to Isaac. He has to come to accept that his father is not always right, and that he can't just follow his father, but he now gets to a point of maturity. He has to come to an understanding that his father's not always right, and now he comes to an understanding that his father is not always wrong. He's able to do the same things as his father. He's able to continue the tradition of his father. And in fact, in Pasuk 24, in Pasuk Kaf Dalet, God promises Isaac that he will have many descendants. He says, I am the God of your father Abraham. Do not be afraid, for I am with you. I will bless you and grant you many descendants because of my servant Abraham. Vayar elav Adonai belaila ahu, vayomer, Anochi Elohei Avraham Avicha, Al tira, Kidcha Anochi, Uberachticha veherbeiti et zarecha, Bavur Avraham Avdi. Isaac eternalizes his father, but he's also a person in his own right. He's promised descendants, not only because descendants are good, not only because it's nice to have children, but because this particular family has been given the task of redeeming the world. V'delet beti p'tucha, says Amichai, k'mo kever shemotocho kamu l'tchia. And the door of my house is open, like a tomb out of which somebody is resurrected. To me, the door of the house being open reminds me so much of the tent of Avram, which we know was open for anybody to come in. The tomb out of which somebody is resurrected does not necessarily remind me of Jesus, but of Isaac. Many, many commentators say that Isaac was indeed sacrificed at the Akedah, but through struggle, rediscovery, activity, faith, Isaac resurrects himself. He becomes whole, and this whole person, through his actions and those of his children, will redeem the world. And that, dear listeners, is why identity is not just for our own psychological good, but also to be able to pass down our tradition and to save the world. What this story, what this incident is telling us, is that true redemption can only come when redeemers are complete and in possession of healthy egos and identities, and we can only create the world we all dream of when we ourselves become the fullest and the best people that we can. And so, if Yitzchak Avinu had been in that cab in Chicago that I spoke about at the beginning of this podcast, and he'd been asked, so where are you from? I believe he would have answered, I'm from Rehovot, place I made me.
Thank you, Rabbi Levin Cruz. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated, so please send an email to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.